Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host, Elizabeth Seaman, reporting live from the back of my dad's minivan.
Reporting live from Tel Aviv.
Today's in Columbus.
Today's guest is formerly of Columbus, though originally from, is it Trumbull County? Tuscarora?
It is.
Trumbull County. And he is a comedian. He is an attorney. He is a very good friend of mine, Mr. Phil Eckenrode. How are you?
Hello, hello, ladies. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Your default setting is compulsive.
Yes.
We literally only said that because Angelo Manajardi did OCD, but we are going to roll with it anyway because we like diversity, I guess.
That's good. I feel like that is the most important of the three words.
Yes.
OCD.
It's the compulsion. It's the implication.
And that's good. It leaves it wider so we can get off topic about more things. And it's not, you know, as frowned upon.
Yes. I have been drinking. Our previous episode was with my father. So I have been drinking. So this will be very... Elizabeth might have to take over at some point.
You recorded it today?
Yeah, just before this, actually.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we recorded it, and that's when we stopped in Columbus, and then we stopped and got food. Then I, like, ate a couple bites, and I'm like, ooh, I can't wait to get back to you. And then I got a poke bowl. Oh, gosh.
Ooh.
So I went to the Tensuke Market, but I forgot there was an anime convention this weekend in Columbus.
Shit.
So then all my good shit's picked over. I'm like, God, get out of here, kids.
Is that Origins or whatever they call it? Is that
the one that was this weekend was Matsuri-Con.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess Origins is probably more gaming.
Yeah, they do, like gaming, like tabletop gaming and stuff. And then there's OhioCon, which is bigger. And that one's in, like, January. And then Matsuri-Con is kind of like their slightly smaller summer one.
We're learning a lot. We're learning a lot about Japanese anime today. So, compulsive. Where do we start with this? How is this a thing for you?
So I guess I can remember this all the way back to maybe high school as the earliest. Maybe there was some element of it before that, but I have always had like a thing with, I guess security is probably the through line of like testing doors 1,000 times before I locked, you know, make sure they're locked. Mm-hmm. And did I turn the oven off?
Says it like security / safety, like, am I gonna burn something down?
Yeah, and it was always, you know, again, as far as I can remember, it was always like this. But, you know, once I got married, it got worse, and then once I had kids, it probably got way worse.
Mm. Oh God, yeah,
And it's not, you know, not to trivialize people that have truly debilitating levels of this. This is not really interfering with my life in any way. But at the same time, you know, every night when we lock up the house and, you know, my wife walks upstairs and has to, from the top of the stairs, listen to me go ka-chunk, 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 ka-chunk to the front door like 15 times, as if after the 14th time, the deadbolt might have just turned itself.
What if it jiggled loose?
What if it
Ohio,
did?
Ohio, we get that? Some earthquakes. What if it was a minor one?
Well,
shifted.
What's really fucked up is that as you do it,
you're
doing it like the 11th or 12th time, you're now starting to think like, am I making it loose?
Yeah. Oh wait, crap, am I ruining it now? Is this my fault?
It's like a real, like, it's like a time traveler thing in a movie where you're like, well, the thing I always knew happened in the past, I'm gonna go back and stop, but I'm the one that actually caused that thing, like,
by trying to stop it.
It's that thing where I'm like, okay, after 15 times the deadbolt appears to still be, you know, horizontal. in the door, like, it's okay. The odds of it not being closed are okay. And I will literally have to, I do this, I mean, if you're listening to this, you can't see it, but I will do this thing where I have to almost kind of just like touch it one more time, like, and just walk away as fast as I can. And it makes no sense. And I do it every single night. And same thing when it comes to unplugging an iron, you know, I will unplug the iron, I'll set it where it goes, and I'll look at the, I can see the plug sticking out. Like, I know it's
not in the wall. Yeah.
I know it's, I can see it. And I'm like, some part of my brain is like, nope, it's fucking with you, man. Yeah. It's still plugged in.
There's no way.
That's what they want you to think.
That's what they want you to think. I will tell you.
They're the ones trying to burn down your house all the time.
They do have, sure. I actually bought, this has been on my Amazon wish list for like 4 years, but there is a doormat that actually says, turn off your fucking hair straightener as you're walking out the door. And like, oh my God, like, I was like, someone fucking buy me this doormat so that I can like think about it.
I feel like you should do something like that, but like as a club on your car. So that way you have to do it. Like, if you see it all the time on the doormat, you don't have to interact with the doormat. Nope. You know, it's something you interact
with. You have to physically do something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if it's on like a sticky note, you put it on the club. You can put a whole list of things on
it. Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, that, and it kind of, you know, so there's, everything is kind of safety, security, and then there's, you know, it is, some degree of it kind of spills over into both my professional life and my hobby professional life, which is an obsession over, you know, I'm a lawyer, so I write and I read contracts all day long, every day. And, you know, I read, you know, an 80-page contract front to back, and then I will feel like
that sounds exhilarating.
I probably just should read it one more time. Don't get too excited.
whoa! How many times? No, but I feel like that's something I do too. Like even on like tests, like reading comprehension tests, I'm like, I did it. Oh, I got to do it again. Yeah, but what if I miss?
I know. And what is that? It's like, I know what I read. I could regurgitate back to you what I read, but maybe my eyes were tricking me the last time or something.
In this day and age, is a revered quality because I can't fucking tell you like how bad the majority of people seem to have like the ability. Like reading comprehension is like almost an extinct thing now.
Terrible.
Like, just people go to war online over something they thought they read, and if they had just taken a minute to read what is actually there,
oh god,
there would be.
I'm the kind of person that's like, if I'm gonna leave a comment, I will read that thing 20 times first.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I am not gonna be the one who sounds like an ass.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. It's just rereading three times, four times, and again, it's completely irrational because you're like, I know what I know. But I'm just gonna do it one more time anyway.
It's gonna change something.
Well, and I was about to say,
the words just change on their own.
You can just bill extra hours, right, for like reading multiple lines. But I think you're in house now, so you.
And then you call it thoroughness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That used to work, but I'm in house guy. Yeah, now I'm on the payroll, so that doesn't even. Now it's just grossly inefficient.
I'm like that at work. Like there's, you know, there's like a certain set of rules and stuff you're supposed to follow before you can okay or nay something. And I'm just like, no, but one more time. No, but one more time. No, but like, maybe I'll just look at something else. Like it's going to like something's all of a sudden going to happen to change my mind to make it easier.
I would be more efficient
if I was decisive.
So where does this, I mean, do you remember this from like when you were a kid? Were you doing this kind of stuff?
I don't really remember before high school. I do remember high school age. Like my mom worked second shift, I think, a lot then. And I was basically by myself, kind of night, like putting myself to bed.
That'd be kind of scary.
And I think that is probably where it, if not started, kind of, you know, manifested itself the most of like, okay, I'm in the house by myself. I'm going to check the door 1,000 times and you know, make sure everything's okay. I don't really remember it before that, but it's annoying. It's you know, thankfully it's kind of only at the level of being annoyingly funny to some degree. And
but I mean, yeah, it always helps if you can laugh at yourself.
I hope my kids don't inherit this.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
I mean, is it just when it comes to like things that are safety related, or is it where else have you found other examples of it?
No, I honestly, as I was thinking about tonight, I couldn't think of anything else that wasn't safety security related, other than when I do stand up, it's you know, I have a very, I guess my style or whatever, if you want to call it, it's my set is very prepared. And, you know, I'm doing 12 minutes, like, I know exactly how it's going to meter out to 12 minutes and not hopefully 10 seconds more one way or the other.
Wow.
So it's the obsession in preparing, but then it's also, you know, I'll get down to the show and I've worked this through, you know, I've probably worked the exact set through 50 times, just to do it 50 times, and then it'll be 20 minutes before the show and I'm like, nope, I'm not gonna remember any of it. I'm gonna get up there and not remember what the first joke is, the second. And you're like, and you have to stop and think, like, well, you were able to remember it 50 times in a row. Do you think this is gonna be the one time?
Yeah,
like, what? But like, that doesn't make any sense, but there you'll see me in the hallway, you know, by the bathrooms, you know, at Hilarity's, sneaking away in the corner, like, talking to myself.
Yeah. I will say that's one thing I do love about stand-up and performance in general, is that no one really, at least when you're in that, like, getting ready to go do something, no one judges you for wandering around talking to yourself, you know? Like, because, like, everyone knows you're there to do your set. Like, I remember the first set I ever did when I did Dave Schwenson's class, and, like, all of us were literally, like, pacing and, like, talking to ourselves, like, running through, the whole set. And no one thought that was weird, and that's, you know, that's the same thing for acting, too. No one thinks it's weird. You're sitting outside the stage, like, bawling your eyes out. Like, it's just, it's completely fine. So with all of this, like, compulsion to sort of make sure everything's okay, has it ever, when you're in your process of checking these things, has it ever not been okay?
Nothing really, like, on the, like, the weird, the where it's come up sometimes, it has come up at work where, you know, you have the type of contract or something that you've read 1,000 times, you know, 1,000 versions of it, you know exactly what it's going to say, and there's that little tiny part of your brain that's like, you know, it's kind of like the drug dealer, like, hey man, don't worry about it. Like, you don't need to read this one time. Like, everything's going to be fine. And then you read it and you push that guy away and you read it. And there's some crazy thing in there where, like, if we would have agreed to it, it would have been really bad.
Oh,
it was like the 1 in 1,000 chance. So that's that is the thing that I keep in my head every time I want to get, you know, if I ever want to get, you know, kind of lazy or like, I know what I'm doing, don't worry about it. You can turn this compulsion off for the day.
Yeah.
I think about the one that almost got away and I'm like, nope, we're just going to keep being crazy. And that's probably just the better route for everybody.
So it sounds like ultimately it sounds like it's the compulsion is overall a very positive thing. You know what I mean? Like,
I think it is. I think it really, it's a net negative for sure. You know, I guess it's all kind of related to where, like we have to be really early to everything we go to. Like, mm-hmm. I can't, you know, my kids have learned, especially my older son who's 9, he, you know, he's old enough to kind of learn or have picked up on the fact that every time we show up for hockey practice or an appointment or whatever, like, we're always 10 or 15 minutes early.
Yeah.
And you know,
but that's a good habit.
Yeah,
where he asked once, I'm like, why are we always so early? I'm like, because if we're always early, then we'll never be late. And
yeah, you can always have enough time to park and figure out where you're supposed to go.
Park, exactly,
because that's how I feel. I'm like, what if I just show up and I can't figure out how to park for like 20 minutes, and then I'm late, even though I was early, and then and then I'm like, I'm just gonna go now. You know what, I'm just gonna go now.
No, and I would have killed, like, I love my parents. They raised me, for the most part, very well. But my mother was very much always the person who's like, ah, fuck it. They have to wait until I get there. Just fuck it. Like, my mom would show up. Yeah. And the other thing is, too, like, I think I should not have watched Bambi as young as I did, because I was always convinced my parents were going to die, like, all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's actually not an uncommon thing for kids. But, like, when you have parents who, like, just don't give a fuck when they show up to things, you're just like, oh, no, they're dead. Like, they died, and that's what happened.
No, you're the parent who, like, when they don't show up on time, you're like, well, clearly they got murdered on the highway.
That's what happened, yep.
They're never coming back. Mm-mm. Yep, that's it. That'll be it, yeah. Yeah, it that drives me nuts. So it's that's kind of, I guess that's all kind of related. I mean, even like parking lots too, right? Like my kids are 9 and 6. They're
oh my God, they're that old self-aware. Already? Oh my God, I can't believe that. Holy shit, okay.
I know. They're fairly self-aware enough to, like, not run out into traffic, but I'm still, like, grabbing both their wrists, like, come on! Like, there's not a car within a quarter mile, and I'm, you know, like a service agent, like, scanning the perimeter. Yeah. Like, I think we're good here. There might be snipers on the roof.
But, yeah. Hey, guys, I can't trust you to leave this to Darwin. Like, I need you to listen to me right now.
Yep. Nope, you are not going to be the kids that get hit in a parking lot. There's enough bad shit out there that I can't stop. This is the one thing I can probably prevent.
So this is one of the rare cases, I would say, like, OCD or compulsion in a lot of ways is a mostly positive thing. I mean, it sounds like you're at peace with it. You made peace with it.
I think so.
Yeah.
You're functioning very well.
Yeah.
Look, high functioning menu, OCD. The menu of horrible things one can be dealt, this isn't that bad.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, did you ever encounter, like, anyone in your family with similar tendencies?
No. No, neither of my parents have this. I can't think of anyone in my family who has anything like this. I don't know. Anomaly.
Yeah. And I mean, it sounds like your family is pretty much just like they grin and bear it. They roll with it.
Oh yeah, my 6-year-old Ben. It was maybe a week or so ago. It was a weekend night, so let's say it was a Friday night, and then Saturday morning, they got up and we were all up making breakfast or whatever, and Ben said something to the effect of, like, we were going to bed, because we all kind of went to bed at the same time because it was a weekend, and he's like, we were going to bed, and I heard a lot of noise. It sounded like the door being opened and closed many times. That was me, buddy. I was just checking to make sure it was closed, and he gave me the look of, like, what the hell?
Okay. All right, weirdo.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, God, thanks, he's starting to see.
Yeah. I'm no longer cool.
I mean, in all fairness, that usually happens eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was gonna be something.
So, it was inevitable.
That's so interesting, because,
like, be like, that's right. Dad's not cool for safety.
How old were you when you got married, had kids?
When we got married, I was 12 years. I was 23.
Oh wow. Okay.
Ooh, you're a baby.
And my wife's 2 years older than me, and when we had kids, we had my first kid, I was 27.
Wow, okay.
26. So, yeah, we wanted to, you know, obviously she's 2 years older, so it was more her schedule than mine, but we wanted to get them out early and be able to still move around a little bit with them when they're playing in the backyard.
That's a good idea.
Without too much arthritis yet.
Yeah, which didn't really work. I mean, 36. I mean, everything hurt.
I was so mad about how, like, when I learned how young you are when your back starts to hurt. I was like, seriously? I can't just mop the floor right now?
Yeah, you think it's something that's going to happen to only people in their, like, 60s and 70s.
Yeah,
and then,
like, I have so much time.
This is too soon.
No. I like to tell.
This can't be right.
I like to tell the story, and this is really, really dumb, and it's hard to explain. But on my 30th birthday, the day of my 30th birthday, I went for a run. That was fine. Took a shower, got out of the shower, went to my closet to pull some clothes out of the closet, and stupidly in our house, we had one of those doors, like, you know how when you open them, they kind of, like, fold and go to the side, and then you, like, open them back up again? And So, for whatever reason, it didn't have a track, and it was just up against carpeted floor, so it was always very hard to, like, close and open. that particular time, mm-hmm. on that particular day, I went to pull it open and apparently was using muscles I should not have used and pulled my groin trying to open the closet door on my 30th birthday. And my groin proceeded to hurt for like 2 weeks that. And I was like, oh, good. Like, welcome to your 30s. You pulled your groin, like, trying to open a closet door. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not supposed to be how you hurt your groin on your birthday. Yeah.
In general, women probably shouldn't be hurting their groins for the most part, in general. No one really should be. But
yeah. Oh, it's very bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that out. I was like, wowee, okay. So, yeah, no, for anyone listening who's under the age of 30, you will be pleasantly surprised by how many things start hurting.
Laugh it up now.
Yeah, laugh it up now with your fucking...
Laugh it up while your back doesn't hurt.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then you start laughing. You laugh too much and you're like, hey, how you like them apples?
Someday you'll...
Millennials with your Tinder and your whatnot.
Someday you'll
your
laugh.
Your Tinder and your lack of pain.
When I was your age, we had to use AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah!
Heck yeah, we did.
Jeez, you could leave little away messages that were quotes from, like, fucking Sum 41 songs. Oh,
yeah.
And
yeah, you gotta change the noise.
A lot of Dave Matthews. Mm-hmm.
You gotta change, like, your profile picture thing and then, like, the noise it makes when you get a message.
Yeah,
I had the Rolling Stones like start me up every time.
No.
Every time I got the message.
I got what was it called? Trillion? Do you guys remember Trillion?
Oh yeah, that's like the old phone ringtone.
So Trillion was like it literally consolidated like AOL Instant Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, and ICQ. I want to say was another one that we used back in the day. So that way you log into one thing, and then every one of your like chat programs was like consolidated into one.
Oh my god,
that's
too much power.
Yeah, and then like whenever like whenever the boy I had a crush on would log online, I had it play Homer going woohoo, and like that was like always like in my brain.
Aww, you little nerd.
It was I was a huge nerd. That's actually cute. So your
love of The Simpsons goes back far.
Oh god, I was actually just wearing a Mr. Plow sweatshirt up until like 2 hours ago.
That's amazing.
When I started drinking wine in my closet, I was like, it's too hot for this, and
too hot for a Simpsons reference. I get hammered in the closet.
You know.
Yeah. The sweatshirt's fine. The reference.
Story of Jess's life.
There's a lot to unpack. Like, oh, well, I'm getting drunk in my closet. You can't make Simpsons
after
references.
After talking to my parents.
I was going to say, so here's the thing. Most of people's default settings, like, there's more, like, well, there's good and there's bad and, like, it comes from this place. And, like, no, we already, like, got right the fuck to, like, nah, it's this thing and I'm good with it. And, like.
It's all part of the disorder. I want to be just efficient and just get to the point.
No, but, like, all right, so let's fucking talk about. So, because I think what I wanted to go with it a little bit was just, like, backing up a little bit. So it sounds like you had kids pretty young, or yeah, you know, youngish.
I feel like normal-ish.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying like you were like way too young, but like, you know, like
irresponsible.
By today's standards, yeah, like
I think so.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were you always like wanting to be like a family guy?
No, that's funny you ask it, because I've thought about that in the past, and no one's ever directly asked me, but I never thought, you know, oh my god, I want to have kids. I need to have kids. But I always probably assumed that I would.
Yeah, and, like, it seems like inevitable, like, that's what everyone wants to get married.
My wife, when we first started dating, kind of always indicated that, it was like, whatever the path of least resistance was, I was like, yeah, I'll just follow the...
That's fine.
You're playing the game of life, and you just go down the one, you know, law school, here, wife, two kids in the car, okay.
Seems like an efficient way to do all right at this game.
yeah. We retire at the Shady Acres retirement home. Once we started dating and I knew that's what she wanted, it was kind of inevitable. And I think her being 2 years older probably helped, just kind of, all right, we're going to get it going sooner rather than later. And I'm really
let's knock this out.
Let's knock this out. You want a baby? I'll give you a baby.
I mean, you're not the first woman to ask for one for me, but you're the first one I'm going to give in to. You are so special.
And by the way, By the way, spoiler alert, you are the first woman to ever ask
So I, is,
I mean, you don't have to tell her that. You're supposed to make her feel special.
Oh, yeah. That's why
that's what does it for her.
So she can hear me.
If it's okay with you, because I really like this story, and like you're the first person, aside from my father, weirdly, that goes this far back with me that I've had on this show. Can you talk about how you proposed to her? Because I think it's an amazing story.
Oh my God. That's romance. I was thinking today, Jess, about, I'm like, I think I've known Jess for like 11 or 12
years. I've known you before you got engaged, so that's how, that's why I know that story.
Oh my God, even more than that then.
Yeah.
Because I was a summer associate at the firm. Yeah. That would have been 2005 or something. But so I was in law school. I was a first year law student, and I knew we wanted, you know, I knew I wanted to propose, and I actually did a little bit of a rope-a-dope. We had a Christmas trip to New York City planned. We were going to New York City with our family. Nice. We were going to go see a show. We ended up seeing Wicked, and it was awesome. And it was kind of like she assumed that it was probably going to happen then. So we went on the trip. And it didn't happen, and she was like, later would tell me that she was kind of pissed.
I didn't know that part, and I love that. I did not know that part, actually. Yeah.
I mean, it was Christmas in New York with snow falling by the tree and Rockville. I mean, just, you know, it would have been the most picturesque, but also probably the laziest fucking idea.
Most cliche. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I didn't do that. So what I did was I told her that for one of my classes in law school that we were going to have a mock trial. Yes. Or a moot trial, and which I had done. I did mock trial in college at Kent State. I was on the mock trial team, which if you think that didn't get me girls, then you're right. I told her I had this, we were going to do this mock trial, and it was going to be at the law school in this little courtroom there. Having the law school, which is really cool, and my professor asked me to be one of the lawyers because he knew I had mock trial experience, and hey, like, if you want, they said, you know, family and stuff could come and watch. It's on a Friday afternoon, like, if you just want to come watch, that'd be cool. If not, no big deal, blah, blah, blah. But the whole thing was a ruse to get her down there. So I called her boss on the side and got her out of work, and so she came down. And she came into the courtroom, and there's like probably 60, 70 people in the room.
No way.
And I'm one of the lawyers on one side, and then, you know, my friends are over on lawyers on the other side, and everybody's in suits, and it's all very formal. And there's a jury box there that has, let's say, the 12 seats in it. 11 seats were full, and there was one open seat. And again, this was all part of the plan of my friend, Laura, who she knew, kind of called her over and said, hey, why don't you sit here? And Melissa, my wife, was freaked out because she was like, well, no, I don't want to sit. Like, I'm not going to fucking sit like in the front row. Like, I want to watch from the back. Like, I don't want to be part of the show. And they're like, oh, no, it's no big deal. We're just here as like window dressing. There's not really anything we have to do.
Yeah.
So one of my professors, Art Greenbaum, my CivPro professor, he was the judge. So he came in robe, all rise, and all the formality bullshit that goes into a real courtroom. So Melissa's sitting there thinking she's just going to watch this performance that I'm doing for a class and probably bored out of her mind, to be honest. And so he turns to me, the judge turns to me, and he asks if I want to, because I was the plaintiff's lawyer. You asked us if I want to make an opening statement, and I said, sure, I'd love to. And so I get up and I go through this big thing about how, you know, this today is about two people, and if you would have asked them, you know, 5 years ago if they'd ever be here for this purpose, they would have never thought it. And, you know, they're so lucky to find themselves forced together in court today, blah, blah, all these little allegories, essentially referring to us without explicitly referring to us.
Yeah.
And And I said, I think she started to get it a little bit, I think.
Were
and
you like
I
watching said, her periodically?
Oh, yeah. And everybody, I mean, it's so funny that everybody else, obviously everybody else in the room is in on it.
Yeah.
And they're all just like stupid, big shit eating grins the whole time and giggling. And, you know, everyone's look, you know, she would later tell me, she was like, yeah, I should have figured it out because everyone was like looking at me for some reason. Like, you know, I'm like, do I have something in my teeth? Like, why is everybody looking at me? So I said, you know, we want to introduce everybody to the two people I'm talking about. One's me, this is Melissa Les. And then I told her, you know, I went over to the jury box where she was sitting. And I said, normally at the end of a really long civil trial, the jury would be asked like 50 different questions. You'd have to fill out this big long questionnaire and all the jurors would have to answer. But for this case, there's only one question. And you're the only juror that can answer, you know, probably will you marry me? Thankfully she said yes. Otherwise that would have been a massive public embarrassment. Yes. Massive. But yeah, I was pretty happy with it. It was pretty good.
It's such a good idea. I mean, like, I mean, obviously that's the kind of thing you do when you know you're gonna get a yes. You know what I mean? Like, otherwise.
Yeah, you gotta know.
You're like really risking a lot.
We had, you know, looked at designs of rings together and stuff. I mean, so it wasn't like a, you know, wasn't gonna be a, it was more a matter of if or when, not if.
When, did you, like, did she tell you, or did you just get the vibe after the New York trip that, like, she was just like, what the fuck?
No, I never did, because she only told me after the fact.
Nice.
So we got engaged on January 27th,
okay.
I think. So it was a month later.
Okay, that's good, because, I think, like, you probably would have been risking, I think, a little bit there, like, to go, like, 6 months later. Because you know what I mean? Like, if it didn't happen then,
right.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah. Yeah, so little did I know that whole month she was pissed off.
That's one of the greatest all-time engagement stories. It's funny because I feel like, it's very hard to live up to that. So, like, ladies, if you want your man to get engaged with you in some really creative way, whip this part of the podcast out and make him feel real shitty. I gotta say that Elizabeth had to drop off because her signal was shitty, and then now I'm trying to get her back in, and because she was logged in twice at one point, and then I, like, was like, well, that's weird. So I, like, kicked off one of the sessions, and now it's saying because I kicked her off before, she's, like, permanently banned from the meeting, which I hope isn't, I hope isn't true, because I kind of need...
We got Liz banned.
Yeah, Liz. I got her banned. Like, and I've sent her, like, 45 different invitations, and, like, none of them are working because she's been, like, banned.
Well, you've done a pretty good job of, like, actually talking to me and also doing whatever the hell it is you've been doing.
Yeah,
well,
it's what I do for a living, because I have to train people and share my screen and, like, all this other tutorial shit. And so very often I'll be, like, training or sharing or whatever, and then there'll be like a fucking, like, I don't know, fire going on behind me, and I have to, like, just pretend like that's not happening but still figure out a way to tell people to get to the nearest exits.
So didn't you use you had something before where, like, it was like some sort of app for, like, safety something?
Yes, because your right? your dad worked for Trumbull County Sheriff, correct?
Yeah.
So they were a client of ours, and they did public safety. That was the job I had in Columbus. Then I actually moved to Cleveland with my ex-husband because he got a job in Cleveland, and I worked from home for like 7 years, which maybe there are a lot of people that are cut out for that sort of isolation.
At that same place?
Yeah. I was working from home at that same place that was based out of Columbus, but I lived in Cleveland, and I'm not made of the material that allows you to be that isolated for that long, so
that would be hard.
It was, yeah. I mean, there are days even now where I'm like, ah, fuck, if I could just work from home like 2 days a week, that'd be great. But that was like full time. So that got hard. And then that eventually transitioned into, I did training for that, which transitioned into legal IT training. So now I work for law firms also, but I do all the training for their tech stuff, which gives me access to things like we're using right now for both the recording and the hosting of this meeting, and it's all fabulous. These are all great perks of being in legal IT. Plus,
did you get those headphones from work, too?
No, these I actually got from my parents. These are fancy-ass headphones because it was funny, too, because my parents, we got home, because I moved to California like a year-ish ago, and when we went home for Christmas, my parents were like, so we don't really want to fly you home with like a fuck ton of presents. So what we decided to do instead was literally spend all the money we would have spent on presents on like one thing for you. And I was like, oh, fuck. So they got me and my boyfriend matching Bose headphones, which I have to say, I would have never thought that I wanted.
Nice. That's a solid gift.
No, it's solid. And like, it was never anything that I even thought about wanting. But then we put them on our way to, on our way home, like, because they're noise canceling. And oh my God, like, we slept like rocks, like, the whole way home. There was like, there was no scream, like, child screaming. There was no, like, loud talking. There was nothing. Like, at one point my boyfriend actually said he thought like the engines had died on the plane and we were all just going, like, we were all gonna die, because like he couldn't hear any noise, and he was like, well, I guess this is just how
everyone seems very calm.
Yeah. The engine's just dead. Yeah, so it's like, it's that gift that I never actually thought that I needed or knew that I needed. But yeah, they're pretty fantastic, other than just making sure that I realize they need to be plugged in because of the whole audio recording nonsense. But yeah,
I'm taking, we're going to Disney World in early October with our kids. It's the first time either one of them will ever have been on a plane. So I hope that everyone else on the plane has those. No, they should be.
No, I was going to say, they're good ages. What I was going to say earlier is you were talking about how they're 9 and 6, which blows my goddamn mind. But like, also the idea that as boys, and this has just been, I have no children to speak of, so I don't, this has just been my experience vicariously, but.
You know of, am I right?
That I know of. Yeah, exactly. But with that, I feel like you are officially through probably the most difficult. I mean, I'm not saying it's not difficult, just as I understand it with boys, like, toddlerhood is like the worst part, and then you're kind of in the clear after that.
Yeah, so that's what I hear so far. I mean, they were both pretty good the whole way through, and they've been great kids their whole life. But yeah, I do feel they just have so much energy, and it's a double-edged sword. Once the younger one got old enough where the two of them could play together and entertain each other, it was like the best thing ever, because my wife and I could sleep in on the weekends, and they could just go fucking play, and we could, you know, sleep till 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock and sleep off whatever hangover we had. And so it was like, oh, this is overall very, very good. But at the same time, there is some downside, which is now you have two boys with boundless amounts of energy now working in concert to piss you off on a regular basis. And so it's again, overall I think it is a net positive, but it's a lot to handle. But they're easy enough where, you know, summertime especially, it's just literally just open the back door and say, you go outside and play. Just, I don't want to see you. I need an hour where I don't hear or see you at all. And, come get me in an emergency. And even then, maybe don't.
Like, if there's blood, fine. Yeah, but like, if it's like, if there's no blood,
gotta be blood,
it can probably wait until, you know, such a time.
It can't be that bad. but they're good. Yeah, so who knows? I've heard, girls, they say, are harder once they're a little older. Yeah. But who knows? There's always
the most I was just gonna say, I hate the delay on this. I was just gonna say, like, the thing I've always heard is that boys have that boundless energy, like you were talking about, which does get like, ah, like, it's just, you know, trying to make sure that they don't kill themselves. But the flip side is then, like, eventually they become, like, 12, 13, and they just mellow the hell out to the degree that, like, it's almost frustrating because, like, you can't get them off the couch to do anything. Like, they're just, like, playing video games and, like, you know, like, texting girls and, like, all that shit. Like, they're just not, they become, like, lumps. But it's still, like, again, from everyone I've talked to, it's still, like, a dramatic sort of swing from when girls become like 12 and 13 and then they're just screaming, like nonstop screaming from like 12 to 17, they're screaming. So
was that you from 12 to 17?
I mean, I didn't, my mom was Irish and Italian Catholic, so we had a very, very finite window in which we could get away with shit. So I mean, I was very dramatic and very moody, to be sure, but it was much more contained because I knew, like, you would just get a backhand to the face if you tried to, like, pull too much shit.
Nice.
Yeah, so, you know, I think I was probably more reeled in than a lot of my friends were, but, like, I mean, I have had, like, I mean, I knew this guy who had literally, like, I want to say all, he had three kids. He was like our age too. He had them extremely young, like 19. And they were all, when I met him, I think it was 13, 12, and 9. And then, you know, they were all,
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And then they were all at some point, like, you know, 17, 16, and 13. And like, it was a lot, at once, I think, for anyone to have to deal with, but especially as like a single parent. But I just distinctly remember, like, the girls specifically, like, starting from age 11 to, like, I'm sure he's even dealing with it now. Like, just it was always screaming. Like, it was nonstop, just, like, screaming about this, screaming about that. It was always screaming. And it always makes me wonder, like, I look back, too, when especially between toddlers and teenagers, like, I don't think I could scream more than 5 minutes before my vocal cords would just die. And I'm like, how do they do that?
Yeah.
Like, how do they?
And you'd pass out.
Yeah. Like, how do toddlers
scream
for that long?
Every time. Sometimes there'll be, like, a song or something that comes on the radio and driving, and you, like, really have to belt it out. And I've done that recently. Like, I have almost passed out while driving. Like, there's – and that was for, like, 9 seconds of full exertion. The way they can do it just for 18 hours and get 6 hours of sleep and then do it all over again.
I can only imagine, like, lung capacity is probably a lot of it just because, like, when you're that age, you haven't ruined your lung capacity with, like, inhaling things. So that's probably a lot of it. But, again, just from a vocal cord perspective, like, how your vocal cords don't just, like, done.
Yeah, shredded. Mm. What were you like in high school?
I was bullied a lot. So I became very introverted because I just didn't want to get, like, beat up. But it's always dark to talk about my childhood. It's fine. That's when I started coming out of my shell more, too, because it was just, like, I think I had a lot of energy and I had a lot of, like, I don't know, showiness that wasn't manifesting itself, so I started just trying to get to a place of caring less. So that's kind of when I became loud. But I don't know, like, I think it mostly came out in my loudness. I don't know, I've talked about this, like, our last episode of last season was me talking about how loud I can fucking be. And what's ironic is that according to my mom, well, so that was the thing. My dad, he used to be like, in environmental health and safety, and he had all these meters to, like, measure shit. And one of the things he had was like a sound measuring thing, which I don't know what that did, but like, it had like
the OSHA decibel.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so he was like, let's take this outside and see like how many decibels you can hit. Cause they both knew I was like really loud. And I was taking it and I was walking outside with it or I think dad was just holding it and I was like walking next to him, just literally talking like this. And he's like looking at it and looking at me and looking at it. And he's like, Jesus like, Christ. Yeah, and all he was doing was talking. Like, he was just like, this is bad. You're going to break it. Like, you're probably going to break this thing because you're so loud.
This is a very expensive piece of equipment. We are not going to use it.
And so, but it was funny because as a kid, I guess, like, as a baby, I didn't really cry or scream. Like, I guess I was, like, totally just, like, chill for the most part. And that's ultimately, like, my chillness is what allowed my brother to happen. Because they were like, oh, babies are chill. It's cool. And then my brother...
Oh, you fucked up.
Yeah, my brother was like, what is that, colicky? And so he just was like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he, I guess he...
Payback.
Yeah, he shrieked like a banshee, I guess, like, the first 2 years that they had him. And then what's ironic is my brother is, like, insanely introverted and, like, doesn't talk at all and, like, doesn't say anything and he's super quiet.
So you guys, you guys flipped.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Or that, or it was just, like I said, I think I just got to a point where I was, like, tired of just, like, being the quiet one. And then I think he was just like, yeah, I'm out of energy. Like, I spent it all in my first 2 years and I can't anymore. So, yeah. But, I mean, it sounds like... It sounds like you're in a good place. Like, you got the kids and the wife, and what brought you, I forget, like, your job brought you to Cleveland, right, from Columbus?
Yeah. So, this company was a client of mine for years when I worked at the law firm, and I was kind of looking to get out of being in the law firm because the hours were kind of crappy, and I loved working with these guys. The owners of the company are friends of mine. Have been since we all went to Kent together. So, we were able to talk and work it out. So I went in-house. So that's why I moved from Columbus up here.
Yeah.
And it's been 3 years, and it's been awesome. It was funny. My wife, it'll never not be funny for me. I don't know why. But she loved Columbus. We both Columbus, and we still love Columbus. She took a little convincing to move to Cleveland because she didn't know anything about Cleveland. Everything she knew about Cleveland was like, oh, that's just like a cold, sad city, and it's horrible. And then we came up here a few times and, like, went downtown and saw how sweet downtown is and cool places like Ohio City and Tremont and everywhere. So she eventually got on board. And she's like, oh, it's so much colder and so much more snow. I'm like, it's actually, like, the same for the most part.
Yeah, that was mine too, yeah.
Columbus is like an hour and a half away. Yep. It's not a big deal. But yeah, we love it up here.
Are you guys out in the burbs?
Yeah, we live in Olmsted Falls.
Okay. You like it?
Oh, yeah. It's great. Schools are awesome. Neighborhood's great. Lots of kids to play with. Lots of kids that we can send our kids out to play with when we're sick of them.
That's awesome.
So everything's good. And the comedy scene has been awesome and a lot of fun to get to know.
I was meaning to ask you about that. So you were actually the first person I ever knew to do comedy, and I remember you talking about it when you were in Columbus. I'm guessing that was the first time you ever really tried it out was when you were in Columbus.
I was the first person you knew that ever did comedy?
Yeah, I mean, personally, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Yeah, so when I was graduated. Yeah, it was probably like 2008, 2009. I graduated from law school, and I don't know, honest to God, I can't remember why I ever decided that I wanted to do it, but I just got it in my head one day that I wanted to try it. And the Funny Bone in Columbus had, amateur competition, kind of like the Cleveland Comedy Open. And I looked into it, and I signed up, and I'd never done it before, and I went, and they have two preliminary rounds to make it to the finals, and I made it to the finals the first time I ever did it, and got some just incredibly inflated sense of worth out of that.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, I am just about the funniest person.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And I had, if you could do 5 minutes, I probably had 4 minutes and 15 seconds. If you counted a couple of, hey, how are we doing tonight? So I did it like maybe 10 times. Like, I got up on stage 10 times. Only place I ever did it was the Columbus Funny Bone. Only thing I ever did it for was the local competition that they would have twice a year. Never performed anywhere else in Columbus.
Okay.
Never once. Never did an open mic. Never did a show at a bar. Like, nothing. It was only the Funny Bone. And got to meet a couple people, and, you know, a couple of whom are still, you know, Facebook friend level kind of people. But never got to really know anybody or get into it. And our first son was born, and then I did it like once after that. And then after our second son was born, I never did it again.
Yeah.
And I took, you know, 7 or 8 years basically off, never having touched the microphone.
Yeah.
Until I came back up here. But I'm so glad I picked it back up.
Yeah, I'm glad you did too. Because I think, I don't know, comedy is a weird thing, but I encourage everybody to try. And especially though, when I know like they have talent. And I think one of my biggest frustrations is like people I know who are like legitimately talented very often don't want that kind of attention. So I have a hard time convincing people that I know are going to be good at it to actually go through with it, because they're just not at the level where they want to be in front of people and they want people to pay attention. And, you know, they would rather write something and then have someone else perform it, sort of thing.
Oh, I'm very fine with it. Not a problem. Well, you gave me my first show in Cleveland.
Which was a disaster, but yes.
Which was an absolute disaster. but in hindsight was, you know, a great memory of like, holy shit. Like, if I came back after that, then that was the...
I love... You were there at such a turning point for me, too, because we often reference on the show the Fateful Night at the Avenue Tap House, and how that also led to, like, all the other showcases, you know, like Couch Gags and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, and then I always talk about how people were throwing shit. And they're like, no, they weren't. I'm like, no, people were throwing shit. Like, people were full on... I'd have someone walk me to my car.
They were throwing shit. They were... I mean, those people down front were so... Like... You think of like, oh, there was a heckler. Like, no. This was not like, say something funny. This was people just at the top of their lungs screaming for no other purpose than to disrupt the show.
Yep.
And yeah, I remember thinking like, oh, I hope this is like a weird, like, anomaly night. I hope this is not like every night. And for Jess's sake, I'm like, I don't care. Like, whatever. I'll be fine. But I hope for Jess's sake, this is like a weird night. And also, like, why are all the bartenders and everything not only okay with this, but they seem to be encouraging it?
And the bartenders were terrible. Like, that was the thing. Like, you'd go to, I don't know if they were especially bad that night, but in most nights, I remember people coming to me and complaining about the bartender. Like, not that they expected me to do anything, but just be like, what's wrong with that girl? I asked for my beer 15 minutes ago. I've gone up and asked for it twice since then. And she just kind of looks at me like she doesn't understand why they want anything from her. And,
yeah. There's like 30 people there. It's not like she's got a big, you know, a lot of people to take
care of. Yeah, it was a massive room.
She seemed like outwardly hostile.
Yeah. So, no, and I laugh even more now that I think about the fact that the only place you had mentioned you had really performed was the Funny Bone, and then you went straight from there to this, which is worst case scenario if you think about it. Cause at least
it's funny. I had never done stand up. I mean, those shows at the Funny Bone, those amateur shows, they would sell out the finals, but like the first couple rounds, they would do okay, but there was probably minimum 75, 80 people there.
Yeah.
So, you know, and that room, I'm sure, I don't know if you've been there.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's not a huge room. And this was before they remodeled it.
Okay.
So it was actually smaller than it is now. But so, you know, I'd never done stand up for fewer than 80 people, and never in a place that wasn't like specifically designed for comedy. Where people were coming with the expectation of watching someone perform and then, you know, hopefully giving them some feedback of some kind. And then to go from that to a bar show where, you know, half the people at the beginning of the show are only there because they didn't realize there was a show about to start.
They want you to die the entire time. Like, they wish you were dead.
Yeah, and you're like, oh my God. Like, what the fuck?
Well, and like, what's...
But no, it was, it, it, you know.
My favorite thing about that show is that, like, people would constantly, like, people who, like, either hadn't been on that show or, like, heard me complaining about it would be like, well, I mean, that's what happens when you do it in a bar and they don't expect it. And I was like, no, no. We had been doing that for a year. We were there every Sunday for an entire year. So if you want to tell me after 48 attempts of doing shows on Sunday nights, they didn't know that was what was going to happen, like, that's on them. That's not on me. That's a whole lot of, that's on them. So no, but I do think that having that kind of shit is probably goes without saying, but it builds character, you know, like it's, it toughens you up.
Yeah.
I mean, it toughens you up because that's it. Like, it really doesn't get worse than that. Like, that's the thing. Like, it probably can, but it rarely does. And just about any other room in comparison.
Yeah, it had, thankfully, it hasn't so far.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad. That's good. So you had nowhere to go but up, which was a nice thing.
Yeah. You sent the bar. No, that was, and I, like I said before, my kind of, my style is that it's like, I don't know, you might say over rehearsed, but it's very rehearsed and prepared. And I think of it more like a one man show or monologue than I do like a free form kind of thing. And, so that being said, it doesn't really work well when there's a bunch of people being obnoxious in the middle of it. Cause like, I'm not like a talk to the crowd guy, and I'm certainly not a engage, you know, seven, large, men who look like they would, each one of them could kill me, let alone seven of them, who are sitting 5 feet away from me. So I'm not gonna be like, hey, why don't you guys shut the fuck up? You know,
well, just, you know. The one thing I will say is I was never worried, because having known you as long as I have, like, I just knew you could hold your own was ultimately the thing that I took away from all of that. Like, because the first time I ever met you, and we can cut this part if you want, but the first time I ever met Phil, I remember him distinctly yelling, I'll go back to jail. And I just, and I just know, like, I was like, oh, at that point, like, Phil cannot be fucked with. Like, he is, he's a tough cookie.
No, don't cut that. And, wow, that was, wow, that, I don't remember having said that, but that sounds like me.
Oh my god, it was one of the best nights of my life, because we went to an Interpol show.
That was it. That was the first
time I met you.
At the LC outdoor, whatever.
We might have met before that, but that's the first time I actually remember, like, hanging out, like, getting to know you.
I think we went to, we all went to Gordon.
We did, and we ran into that professor from OSU that you knew, Daniel Lee or somebody Lee.
Oh yeah, Professor Lee. Yeah. He's a IP professor. Interpol outdoor. What was the? Was it Interpol? I'm trying to think if there. Do you remember who was like opening?
I think we got there after Interpol started, though. Like, because we got super drunk before the show and walked to like.
That sounds about right. Was it? That was a Modest Mouse too.
I don't know. You might be right. I only remember Interpol. And I remember there was, like, this guy who was, like, tripping balls. Like, we were down in the pit at one point, and, like, I don't know. Yep. It was, like, a whole thing where he was trying to fight everybody, and you were, like, trying to get him to calm down. And, like my ex-husband, who's, like, 5'6", was like, I'm going to go. And I'm like, no, you're not. Like, you're going to get your ass beat.
No, he's not a large guy.
I just remember that. And, like, your friend, you had a friend, and I can't remember...
Chris.
Yeah, he was cool. I liked Chris.
That's my buddy. That's my buddy Chris, one of my best friends. He is like, and the only reason I know for sure it was him, like, he's my concert friend.
Okay.
Like, I don't know if you have one of these, but he's like the guy I always go to concerts with, or the guy I always see the new Marvel movies with, or whatever. He's like my music and nerd friend. So, yeah. Any concert, probably any concert I've been to in the last 15 years, he's been there. But yeah, I remember that. I remember that show. It was a good show, I think.
And the best part was that
based on the fact that I was screaming, "I'll go back to jail," I probably don't remember what the set list was.
No, I don't either. I remember it was Our Love to Admire. It was that album that just came out.
Oh,
and I remember. It was like a Wednesday. So we were still young enough to be getting like trashed on a Wednesday and go to a concert.
Yeah. Go to work the next day.
Those are good times. Fine. Yeah. No, that was awesome times. I want to let you go because my boyfriend's asking me questions about things and I want to make sure that I'm there to help him. But are you on any social media that you want to promote to anyone?
Sure. I'm on all of them, I guess. But Twitter, Phil_Eckenrode.
Okay.
Stop by there to see me tweet out one joke per month. Very prolific.
Is there any shows? So this will probably air. I want to say this is going to air the beginning of October. Do you have anything coming up in the fall you want to promote?
Oh, no.
Okay. I guarantee you, if you go to his social media, I guarantee you, if you're in the comedy scene or you're comedy scene adjacent in Cleveland, you will see him on a flyer. I'm sure that he'll probably be opening for someone cool by October, the time it rolls around. You are actually like, you are ascending. Like, I mean, you're for how long you have been in the scene, you have progressed mightily. So,
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun. I've been very blessed. I've met so many great people. Who have put me on shows and have had me out. So it's not my own doing. It's the great connections I've made.
I think it's both. It's probably a little from column A, a little from column B. Because there's a lot of shitty people in the Cleveland scene who have been doing it like 10 plus years who have not escalated nearly as quickly. So yes, check out Phil Eckenrode. You can check us out at Epic Fall, Instagram, Twitter, the default setting on Facebook. We don't have anything else besides Facebook because I don't have time to deal with that shit. I want to thank OK Pants for doing our logo, and I want to thank Above Below Entertainment for being our network. Okay, love you all! Turn around, don't walk.